I think there's always something about going back to the place where you first started dreaming and dreams that always grounds me.
Oh, baby, when I turned 30, the should season I was in was just full on like, this isn't good enough. I don't have a man. I don't have a baby. I don't have a house. I don't have this. I put all this aside for my career. I sacrificed all that to put that on hold. And then I don't even have a job at all.
Baby.
Like, I was sick.
Mad.
Sick. And then I finally realized, like, I'm over here making myself sick over something I cannot control.
People are like, oh, Gia is doing her thing, big things. Sylvia's doing big things. Ashley's doing big things. And they don't understand the valleys that we have been in, the nights that we have cried ourselves to sleep. Hard pivot to Love is Blind.
Well,
yes, if you feel and you are wailing like Marissa did, receive that that thing is not for you. Anything that is for you is never going to hurt you like that.
I beg you, ladies, call 1-800, call me now before you beg a man.
That's right.
To stay with you.
What's up, everybody? I'm Ashley Allison, and welcome to Wait a Minute, where we take the conversation out of the group chat and bring it to the couches. I'm here with my homegirls, OG to the game now, Sylvia Obell.
Hello.
And we have a newbie, but she's probably a familiar face to you, Miss Gia Peppers.
Hi.
Welcome.
I'm so happy to be here.
We're so happy to have you.
Thank you, happy to have you, friend.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to Sylvia for telling me about this amazing moment.
Oh, my God.
Congrats to you, honey. You making it do what it do.
Thank you. I'm a walking shell of myself, but yes.
That's all right.
Nevertheless, we persist. Okay. All right, Sylvia. Last week you were heading and jet setting off to your alma mater.
Yes.
How was homecoming? How you doing, boo?
G-Ho was great. And for those who don't understand the acronym, it stands for Greatest Homecoming on Earth.
Yeah, because I was like, what is that?
Yeah, it's the because, you know, I went to college right when Twitter started. I'm that old or that young, depending on how that sounds to you. But the billboards in Greensboro for homecoming would always say Greatest Homecoming on Earth. Mm. So we just hashtagged it G-Ho. And it never became a competitive thing until HBCU Twitter made it that. Because they're like, how you going to be the greatest? Somewhere.
Right.
I'm like, thank God. That's how you know I'm the only HBCU alum on the couch. Because if I had just said G-Ho, they'd be like, hey.
Right, because I'm not claiming Ohio State's Greatest Homecoming.
But it is the greatest, we are the number one public HBCU in the country currently.
Congrats.
And our band is number one ranked by ESPN, Better Than the Bands, currently.
Okay.
But, yeah, so all that to say, homecoming was great. But I mean even to say that because A&T is now more popular than it was when I went there even. And because of that, our, like, you know, I think we have one of the last pure homecomings left. By pure, I mean, it's not super commercialized by all the brands. It's also not ticketed. You don't need a wristband to go.
Yeah.
Like now, like bigger homecomings like Spellhouse and Howard, they require you to buy a bracelet to come to tailgate.
And everybody shows up that even the didn't
go. Yeah, don't go. And so for us, it's like you can still just tailgate no matter. Like you don't have to pay to tailgate. You don't have to pay to come on campus.
That's great.
It's open to everybody. You know, you pay for the game, but the game is not on campus. So it's like, you know, it's and it's still very much like it's in Greensboro, North Carolina. You know what I mean? There's no W Hotel there. You know, it's still like it's very whatever. But it's just so many people. It's such a big school. And now we definitely notice the difference of like, oh, there are people here who did not go here.
Yeah.
Like, what, people are coming
to
homecoming.
What's the population or what's like the school size? Like how many students?
Oh, it's so big. I mean, when I was there, I know our class was like 10,000 students.
Really?
When I say that we were the biggest public HBCU, like most like most applied to, most attend, population wise for HBCUs, A&T is like the biggest currently.
Yeah. Did you go to HBCU?
I did not. I just grew up on an HBCU.
Where'd
you? Oh, because you're a DC girl.
Yeah, so like Howard University is the HBCU that I went to for life. and I say that and I'm like, you know, joking but not because like my mom is a Howard alum.
Okay.
Like, and then now also teaches at Howard. So when I tell you If you're from DC, nine times out of 10, someone you know was a teacher, a student, or something. Uh-huh. So when I tell you I've been to 27 homecomings and I'm 34 years old, I'm not lying to you. Like, that's my hilarious. Mother had me on the yard from a baby. My mom's a Delta. So, like, it's
oh,
like,
yeah,
okay, per. So y'all know, y'all go hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, you know, it was, it's literally, I went to every, like, Girl Scout camp, Black Girls Camp, writing camp, arts camp, like, any type of thing for children that was on Howard's campus, I have done.
Yeah.
And so when I went to college, I was like, oh, I don't want to be like Gail's daughter on the campus. Like, oh, you look Gail. Oh, look Gail. There she
goes. Can't do nothing.
Can't. And then also, my mom's dental office is literally behind Howard University.
Oh, so like, I grew up. See, we had the opposite situation. That's why I didn't go to Rutgers.
Yes. Because yes.
And you went to Rutgers.
Yes. Because I went to Rutgers because I really, really did not want to go to St. John's University in Queens. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the y'all. I was up there anyway because I had a lot of friends that went there and I didn't enjoy Rutgers my first 2 years, but it's fine. And then I ended up realizing that like New York is where I wanted to intern and do all those things. So it ended up being the perfect halfway point. Yeah. Where if I wanted to go to DC, I could.
Yeah.
If I wanted to go to New York, I could. So it ended up working out. But girl, yo, how are
I'm a fake HBCU girl.
Which ones have you been to?
All of them. So let me tell you. No, Sarah, not homecomings, but let me. Okay. So when I was coming up, my mom, I was in Jack and Jill, and they used to do the college tours on the HBCU campuses over spring break.
I did a college tour.
I went on a college tour for 7 years straight and visited almost every HBCU.
7 years straight?
Yes. You were just going for the ride.
Literally. I was like in the sixth. I was literally in the sixth grade. I would be on the campus tour like, what's the male-to-female ratio? And they'd be like, how old are you? How old are you?
The college tour is how I decided I wanted to go to A&T.
I wanted to go to HBCU, but life's, and right when I was going to college, my dad started to get sick, and so my mom was like, can you stay closer to home? But I, like, got into Howard, Spelman, and Hampton. Girl, I still get stuff from Hampton.
Hampton said you are in the role.
Hampton's the first homecoming I ever went to. It's the only homecoming I ever went to underage. When you guys talk, when you talk about going to homecoming underage, I can't even imagine because I know we didn't get to speak about like what I actually did during homecoming, but like
we're gonna keep this PG-13.
It's all things that you can't do unless you're 21 and over.
Exactly.
So I can't even imagine. I mean, obviously there's the tailgating, there's the food, there's the spirits, there's the game.
Howard used to be
but it's like
open, right?
It's like the party.
Yeah,
the,
in the same way that like GHO was open.
It
used to be open. So you could just like walk
on
the campus.
That's what I mean, like one of the last because everybody started this
exactly.
way.
Like I saw, I was home for House Homecoming. I did a couple of things, but I didn't do too much. You know, I just kept it cute because I didn't like, you know, like I didn't let people know I was in town and I didn't want to be that girl like last minute like I heard you're having a big party. Can I come? I just went to like things with
you do need to know somebody like if you did not go to the school
you gotta go with
you
somebody
you gotta go with somebody who knows how because you would just be like out here in these streets like
even though that's one of the reasons why we do brag about our homecoming our homeboy Mouse Jones just because he was hosting trap karaoke
he just
came. And he was, he was claiming to look for me. He never found me. It was a couple years ago. He was like, y'all, these Aggies. He's like, I got pulled in. And next thing I know, I'll be in bed, drank, shots, poured, fun.
Yeah.
Like,
fun.
I think it's just like an accepting, like, not like a.
So have you recovered? You know.
I just recovered today in time for this. Okay. Thank goodness. This is good. I got back Monday. North Carolina's also far from
Los
Angeles.
You got back Monday. It also is Thursday.
Yeah, it took that long. Because I looked at my phone. I took 11,100 steps.
Every day?
At home. No, at home.
Oh, I thought you were about to say photos. I was about to say, girl, get it together.
No, 11,000 steps. 11,109 steps, not in sneakers that you're supposed to take 11,000 steps in because I'm just walking around campus.
You had heels on?
No, I didn't have heels on.
What'd
you
have on?
I didn't have the right sneakers. Okay. You know my mid-30s are teaching me?
The right
all sneakers are not
you gotta
created
have,
equal.
You got to have it.
Jordan 1s are hollow.
Horrible.
No, they don't got no
you
support.
You can buy them, but then you got to rip the insoles that come in them and then you put the real ones in. That's that plus 40 life, okay?
My little brother does that. You got to put real insoles. He just is an athlete.
Yeah.
So he was like, yeah, no, yeah, I switch out the insoles.
No, I did 11,000 steps in Jordan 1s. I never felt
like that. Oh, no, your arches are like
for like flat. For like 8 hours.
I can't believe Michael used to play in those. Like, Mike, you wilding,
bro. I know.
That's why he got to keep making new shoes, because that's right, probably
hurt. Like,
he was like, no, we need a second, third, fourth. Yeah.
Because also, well, we don't have to go down the rabbit hole in Jordans, but like, I also feel like they are really narrow.
They are.
And I have a narrow flat footed.
So it's just all bad.
I mean, I have a narrow foot and they still like squeeze my foot.
Yes.
I'm like, what type of foot did you have?
Yeah. I don't know. I was wilding for respect. It's crazy.
He knew he'd been playing in the shoes.
Right.
They're cute though.
They are cute.
Hello, you can wear with a dress up, dress down. You can give.
Yes, yeah. So anyway, I think there's always something about going back to the place where you first started dreaming and dreams that always grounds me, and that's why I love homecoming. Like being by my old dorms, being on the campus where everything I'm doing now is just an idea, or not even an idea.
Yeah,
something about that. Like there's a lot of gratitude and like grounding. And also just being around people who just know you and knew you before everything and could care less.
So what was your dream then?
I mean, at the time when I was on campus, I definitely wanted to be an entertainment journalist. Mm-hmm. I remember them saying...
So check.
To check. I remember being told, maybe you should stick to news because it's a hard industry to break into, entertainment.
They told me that too.
And like, but at the time, print was still living. Like, I thought I was going to be a magazine editor-in-chief. Mm-hmm. Obviously, print died. Like by the time I got into the industry, but I did get my dream job at the campus was Essence Magazine. My first job after grad school was Essence Magazine.
Okay.
So I think for me, my dreams that I jumped on that campus, I remember thinking they happened so like pre-25 where I was like, oh shoot, what's gonna happen now?
Maybe.
So I think everything that's happening now
you could dream bigger.
Dream bigger. Everything that's happening now is beyond. Even me being on camera, I never did broadcast in college. Like I never did even took a class to do broadcast. I had no desire to be in front of the camera at all.
Interesting. So for me, I definitely wanted to be in front of the camera, but then I took a hiatus from like journalism for about 15 years.
Ooh.
Because when I was in college, I remember being in the newsroom at the local news station and talking about, I'm about to go to grad school. And they kind of like looked at me like, why? Yep. Like, you don't need to go to grad school. You just need to go out and report. And I'm like, but don't you want to like know more about what you're talking about? And they were like, no, you just learn it from your sources. And I was like, I don't think so. So I decided to like take a beat and go do the work to learn the work. So I'm doing less journalism now though, and more commentary, but I feel like you got to actually do the work to be able to talk about the work. That's my personal opinion.
I like that. I was of the mindset of just get to it because my dad's a journalist. So I learned very early on like how important it was to like get into the newsroom, get into the field, and especially studying entertainment journalism in particular. Like when we were coming up, entertainment journalism was, you know, there were no blogs that were on Instagram. Instagram wasn't a thing. It was like very new when we graduated. Like very new.
Was YouTube out?
I remember teaching as the
YouTube
editors,
was out.
I remember teaching the Essence editors how to like, I used to post live on the Essence Instagram all the time because they didn't even know it was important. It's like TikTok now.
Yeah. I was tweeting like from like the CBS newsroom. Like,
and we were the
like
ones teaching newsroom. Everybody like, here's what we should do.
Millennials started all this, y'all. Welcome.
Yeah. We built all this shit.
I'm the eldest of the millennials. Like, I'm barely a millennial. Yeah. But I was out of college by the time YouTube had started.
Yeah.
And I remember like starting a vlog. I remember starting a watering hole vlog.
I love
back
that.
Back in 2009.
Planting the seeds.
For this.
And then being like, and then it also took a 15-year hiatus. But being like, there's something to this. Yeah. And if you can like figure it out. And people were like, YouTube, what? Like, kind of like when like Uber, like when you would get in somebody's car and drive around. Yeah. It's like, that's how we move around.
And
these
now
days.
YouTube is booming. But I think like that's the beautiful part about like dreaming and doing is like I grew up being the kid that could not be put in timeout because my room was like my stage. Like I was hosting talk shows with stuffed animals. I was having full on concerts, several outfit changes. It was very important to me. Like exactly. Like I was like, I produced, you know, this new show, so I can't come out. I'm working on it. But it ended up being definitely the runway for my dreams and what I'm doing now and what I'm able to accomplish. But I wanted to be on camera. Like I knew from jump. I saw Free on 106 in Park introduce her video for Fighting Temptations. I said, that's it.
Yeah.
She's in the video rapping.
Uh-huh.
And she's introducing herself. That's me all day.
See,
and so I knew that for me.
For me, it was writing.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be writing. You know what I mean? I tell Danielle Smith, I'm like, I want it to be you.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I think part of the gig of like us, what the industry I graduated into requires hybrid.
Yeah.
And I just happen to be good at being on camera. But it wasn't like an aspiration.
Yeah.
I do think this speaks to like the bigger conversation we wanted to have
on
today's episode. But I also wanted to check in with you before we do about just because before we get into it, I really, you know, our good sis Ashley. She was a little down last week. She wasn't a normal optimistic ray of sunshine that we're used to.
I know.
How are you feeling now?
I'm feeling a lot better. Last week, I was in a mood. I was like, what is that? I was worried about myself. Like, okay, I know you commit to the role, but like break out of the character. I'm feeling better because what I decided was I am not going to let other people's triflingness.
Oh, that's right.
Determine my outcome.
There it is.
And I am sitting on this couch because I am the master of my fate. And I am like, I had to get a good word in, a couple good words in. I was like, I felt like there was some spirits around me trying to bring me down, trying to distract me. But I'm feeling much better. Now, that being said, I'm still nervous as hell about this damn election, but we ain't gonna talk about that today. But
we're just glad to know that you're doing good.
I'm better. Because Sylvia was like,
I'm not used to her being this. She was like, forget everybody.
I know.
These men, these white women, nobody's on our side. Oh. I mean, she's not. Sometimes every black woman has that day.
You got to have it.
Yeah.
Annually, monthly.
Moving in LA weekly.
I'm like more of a quarterly girl, but
that's why I wasn't used to it, because I tell you, Ashley has been optimistic this entire first two seasons about the state of the world and the way that I aspire.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, they finally broke my little line. My little sunshine.
But thank you for asking.
Yes, because I really was.
I felt your concern. And I didn't like the despair that I was in. Mm-hmm. And I was worried, like, am I going to be able to pull myself out of it? But I'm like, I am. Because,
but you're human,
but
too.
Also, like, I didn't have to do it by myself. Like, I was around people like you. And you guys brought me up. So thank you for checking on me.
Of course,
That. Good for you.
Yes.
Get some grace for
yourself.
Yeah.
You're human. Like, we're all allowed to have down days.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I really am so, like, just in awe of this moment. So I've just been sitting here like this. I love this.
I just love to watch.
And I love that all of this is a birth child of you choosing yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about, like, when you were saying you were in your room, remember what my dreams were when I was a little girl, but I have an amazing big sister, and she, like, I remember she would like write letters to Oprah and like, yes. Like she and was like, I know I'm special and da 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 da, and like she just was like excellent at everything, and I was just kind of like always observing, like trying to find my way, but I knew like this cookie cutter box that everyone typically says you have to live in growing up in the 90s wasn't going to be my thing, but I didn't have a profile of how to do it a different way. And really, like, I had perfected professionalism. Mm. I had perfected going into the job 9 to 5, working as like not the number one, but the deputy, and crushing it, and like having a lot of like say, but not having a lot of responsibility in the say. And I remember, like, right when COVID hit, being like, no, this is, like, the world is going to, like, I finally, like, found my stride of, like, getting to the office, like, running teams, doing all this stuff, and now it's coming to an end. And COVID was an awful, awful time in our world's history. But COVID also liberated me to see what was possible. And because I was, like, I never thought I would be functional or effective working from home, but working from home, I started to thrive.
Wow.
And then I remember after I went on the campaign and I left my job and I was going to go back into the White House to work for Biden after he won. And I was like, why? I remember like New Year's came and I was like, what are you doing? This is not for you. This is, first of all, the job, they had offered me a really good job. I have never really told this story publicly. They had offered me a really great job, like a really, really powerful job in the White House, and I turned it down because it wasn't what I wanted. The job I wanted, though, they wouldn't give it to me. And I had to make a decision, like, am I going to settle for what they want for me, or am I going to do what I know is best for me? And I was like, okay, I am not going to go into your administration, and I'm going to, like, take this leap of faith. And I started my company. I was like, I want to work for CNN, got signed 3 months later, and it was kind of been like all she wrote. But I was shook because I was like,
Betting on yourself and taking that leap. getting out of that comfort of like a steady paycheck is not easy.
It's not easy. And retire, there's all the things, but I have never felt freer.
What is the 401k?
Retirement. I know.
I don't know where. I mean, you know, we're just going to deal with that when we get there.
Yeah. And then, can I, give me 10. Give me 10 years. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. We'll do that when we get there. Yeah. But no, that's amazing. Because I do think that, like, it's interesting that you say the pandemic freed you. Because I do think, it's like, I think in the sense, like, you know, even as a Christian, I always think that God uses all things, like, turns it for good in some way or another. And it's like, even in the worst scenarios, I think so many, like, it was like a huge, horrible, but like necessary, almost like reset that like I feel like this whole world needed to, like, when we all sat, how we're forced to sit down
and do nothing.
I think so, like when you're constantly moving and you're just on the wheel of capitalism, like you have no time to think about what do I really want.
Am I happy?
Like, what about my life? And I think that's why we saw a lot of divorces. We saw a lot of people quitting. We saw a lot of people betting on themselves. And I think also the economy also forced us, a lot of us, to do so. For me, becoming my own, like working for myself, was not a choice I made, per se. I don't think I could take credit. I always joke that God, like, kicked me. Like, he was like, because I knew before the pandemic hit, it was like, it's time to leave BuzzFeed. It's time to leave BuzzFeed. But I was like, you know, I had my shows there that I was doing with Twitter. Like, we had our morning show, AM to DM. I was hosting Hella Opinions. But when those seasons wrapped and we were in this in-between stage right at the end of the year, not sure if they were going to, Twitter was going to, like, buy them again. And I had gotten the offer to start working on the Netflix podcast with Scotty. I was like, okay, this podcast, if they get it, like, this will, I could live off this. And maybe this is it. Like, this is my chance to, but then when the pandemic hit, I'm like, I need my health insurance. I got asthma. This is a respiratory disease.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like a virus, like, you know, like what's going on? And I think I still was clustering in. But then finally, like, when they were offering, like, by summertime, when they were offering furloughs, which was like, you don't get paid, but you can keep your benefits. At least at BuzzFeed, that was what it was. I was like, now, okay, God, you heard me, because I want my benefits. Yeah. But I'm too, like, while this is going on, I want to make sure I have my benefits. But I also don't need that money. So this is like from them. But I was like, okay, this is it. Like, this is my chance, you know, to like, this, like, you know, to have to do it. So then, like, but I think what helped me ease my way into working for myself was having a contract for a full year for the podcast. Cause I was like, when you're freelance, you have to hunt what you eat. And I am a girl who likes to know that the money is coming
in.
On the 1st and 15th of every week. I have broke PTSD. I did not, you know, I watched, you know, my dad go from having a lot of money to not having any money. And, like, I know what that, I have that fear.
Yeah.
And so for me, like, stability and success kind of went hand in hand. And I really was forced. But I think, again, with the pandemic, it was like everything I thought I knew, everything I thought I could control.
Yes.
Everything I thought I could foresee was, I was shown that, like, girl, your whole life can change in an instant.
Like that.
So why not?
Why not?
Like, and I think I was like, well, I'll just, people want me right now. People are booking me for things right now. Let me just ride this wave while I can. And like, just see how far I can take it. And like, that's kind of just been how I've gotten here. I think I'm still surprised as anybody else I work for myself. Like, I'd be like, oh,
me
yeah.
Too.
People call me an entrepreneur. I'm like, no.
Yeah, but again, them taxes tell me I'm an entrepreneur.
Me tell me listen,
like, whether I want to be or not, I am an entrepreneur. Yes. And I think what's interesting about it is, like when I first jumped out in the freelancing game, there weren't a lot of girls in media doing it.
You
like,
were the first
I was one of the first
doing.
People that actually was like, well,
what year
guess
was
I'll
that?
Just figure this out. 9, carry the 10. Because the last job I had officially was actually at Essence.
I was going to say,
that was the last.
Like,
so, like, 2016. Yeah. Okay. I've been doing this for almost 10 years. So, like, the last job I officially had was at 2016. I was the associate editor of EssenceFest.com. And at that time, they would fire you after. So, they would bring you on in January and let you go in August. Because you were literally there
for the
just
festival.
For the festival. And I was, like, hoping, like, you know, someone's going to love me enough to let me
stay on
and go on a different team. Like, I've done, you know, a great job, and they didn't love me that much. And
they did.
It wasn't about love.
It wasn't about love you, but you had to learn that. Like, at 26, I was like, they don't love me.
No, I get it.
But now, on this side of it, you understand that budgets and things happen. Right. And it's a lot of different things that come into play. But I had been already at that time working for the Wizards, working for Ebro at Hot 97. So I always was like, okay, so as long as you keep several things in the air, you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And so I am a hustler to the death of me. Yeah. But I have learned how to pull that back a little bit and just be in more flow with it, do things that I actually want to do. Mm-hmm. And so now, almost 10 years into my freelancing and working for myself, I have just realized that at the end of the day, like, yes, go get what you want. It's mm-hmm. all going to happen as it should happen.
Yes.
That's another thing. Like, at the mm-hmm. end of the day, you can want to do anything in the mm-hmm. world, but you can't be so attached to the outcome and the timeline that you forget about the blessings that's happening to you in real time.
Come on,
and so what I used to do was sit up there and be like, oh, I don't have this job on E and I don't have this job on Access or whatever I really, really wanted at that time. And I used to be like, oh, nothing else is good enough. And then I realized that my whole story was I wasn't good enough. Like, this job wasn't
Stories
good enough.
We tell ourselves.
The narratives, baby. We bless God for COVID because it got me into therapy finally. All the stages that I was running to for the applause were silenced, and I had to really sit and hear my own voice for the first time. And I was like, I don't like that.
But you did it.
Don't like that voice in there. But I did it. I've been doing the work. And so now where I think the hustle came from, I come from a hustling mama. That is a work. That is a Jamaican woman internally and spiritually. She just always has several jobs. And so I always know, like, you can work. Like, you can work.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, okay, what's the intentional work? Some work you just got to do to pay them bills. Amen.
Right.
Amen.
That
DEI
is real. We going to get them. But I'm grateful for the opportunities that have come, and now I pray for, like, alignment. Now I pray for, like, the things from heaven that are mine to be released in the world when I'm ready. Lord, if I'm ready for this, show me.
Show
now me. I ask for the wisdom of how to manage and steward these things that are in my life, because I realize nothing is an accident.
You know, it's like when in 2016, I was leaving the White House.
Yeah.
It was like one of the lowest points of my life. My relationship ended. Mm. I had started working at the White House a month before Michael Brown was murdered, and my portfolio was police violence.
Oh.
So for 2.5, almost 3 years, I absorbed the trauma, the shooting at the church in Charleston, Mother Emanuel, like being at those funerals. And when you're in the belly of the beast, you don't get the time to express your emotions, right? And so literally for about all of 2017, I was in a pure state of trauma. And for 6 months, I like couldn't get off the couch, couldn't leave. I was just like, my body was healing. And luckily, I had been in therapy before. I went back in therapy. But in that season, I tried to become an entrepreneur. And when I tell you, no door was opened. Like, I was like, how have I just left the White House? How have I made all these relationships and no one will hire me for a contract? It was not my time. Mm-hmm. It was not my season. I would have burned bridges because I was not healthy and whole. I couldn't even think. God was like protecting me in ways.
Protection.
Yeah, like literally protecting me in ways. And then when I tell you, like, 4 years later, when I said no to what I knew, when I had like prayed on New Year's Eve and said, like, God, tell me, and had to call like somebody at the White House and be like, I'm not taking this job. And when I tell you, the first phone call I made telling somebody I wasn't going to the White House, they hired me. The second phone call I made, they hired me. I made 10 phone calls straight in a row and had 10 contracts.
That's amazing.
And I was like, okay, God.
Heard you.
Okay, heard you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for, like, but also good job, Ash, for, like,
trusting
and doing the work.
Yeah. And not allowing that first season of no's to inform how you went in this season.
That's
because
right.
we often, like, go from the valley and we can't fight to see the actual, like, when you've made it to the other side, you still have valley mentality.
Yes.
So good for you for pushing through and be like, nah, we trying to.
But also, like, people. I love these conversations because I feel like people are like, oh, Gia is doing her thing, big things. Sylvia is doing big things. Ashley's doing big things. And they don't understand the valleys that we have been in, the nights that we have cried ourselves to sleep.
Listen, or even just at the fact that, like, yes, even when you have those moments where your purpose and your alignment and everything is working out and coming in, that there is no, okay, I just stay there.
Mm.
There is, like, I think that success is all up and down, up and down. And I think that, like, even after you have those moments where you say no, you book the 10 contracts, everything happens, and then you have a year like this year where suddenly
Lord.
DEI is out of fashion.
Baby.
And the black squares have evaporated from Instagram, and the billionaires are like, well, I would prefer my yacht and my private jet over my multicultural marketing team. So it's like suddenly all the contracts or jobs that people who make black content like you and I do for sure, are suddenly like half the stuff we do is like no longer there, or it's paying half of what it used mm-hmm. to be. Baby. Or like the people who would hire us are laid off.
Yes. Yes.
Like layoffs are happening. In journalism, even the jobs that you would go back to,
not newsrooms
even there. Are being gutted. And it's like, oh my God.
What is happening?
What is happening? I'm out here on this, and you know, and it's like, it's been like this. And now I was like, we about to, and then it's like having to sustain
that faith
Ooh. And that like, and your purpose and like your belief and trust in what you're supposed to be That's doing right. here. And, but I think what helps me, especially because this has been one of those years.
Yep.
And I think like this is probably as an entrepreneur, this is probably the least amount of money I've made since I've become one
Same.
Is this year.
Same.
And so
Nasty
I think
work.
It's work. And it's like, but Same. The expenses are not what the expenses Hello. Were in 2020 because yeah. I've been doing it. For longer. So, and the taxes ain't either.
Hello. Like, can I get a break?
They're still looking.
You still want me to pay for last year?
Okay.
You ain't getting right. a
break? You know? Oh, no. Okay.
October 15th did just pass. That extension deadline.
All right, Ashley, not right now. I'm trying to do your show.
I'm saying that for myself, no, not for you.
No, I'm fine.
I'm like
that's the show we need. Who's going to come teach us how to do that?
That's Listen, what our we need to have an economy.
No, I mean, and then we're not even going to talk about the fact that we're trying to do finances when we're all black, when financial literacy is not, generational wealth is not something that we were taught growing up or how to do. So, you know, it's we're the first in our generations doing so many things. And it's
things.
So, like, to Gia's point about not getting caught up in hustle culture, even in years like this, where it is your instinct to be like, I just got to do what I got to do to make money.
Yeah.
But it takes, like, trust to, like, keep your integrity, your morality. Like, there's things that we've all had to say no to, I'm sure, because of who was asking or what they stand for, what it looks like, or, like... And it's just, it's really, I like betting on yourself. It just sounds like such a simple phrase, but really it's such complex work.
It's so hard.
And it never stops being hard. I think like, that's the thing nobody told me.
It never stops. It's not even a season. No, I'm going to reframe that.
Okay.
It is going to be easy one day for us. We just
my optimist. She's back for real.
It is. No, I have to believe it is. I cannot be in this perpetual cycle of like, It feels like not even in a season, but like I wake up in the morning and I have like a million doubts about Watering Hole. Mm-hmm. And then by the time it's lunch, I'm like, okay, we got this. And then by the time I'm dinner, I'm calling Dana, like the chief of staff, like, girl, what we gonna do, you know? But I believe that we are being pressure tested mm-hmm. so that when it gets easier, we can handle a surplus.
That's what it
I
is.
Have to believe that.
That's
I have to believe that.
That's real.
I don't know how it's gonna get easier. I don't see the path. But I have to believe that it can't be this
constant.
I
don't think it's hard forever. I just think that there's periods of elevation.
Yes.
And
yes.
transition.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And that those may, let's say they happen every 5 years or every 4 years, but like they happen.
They happen.
It's a cycle.
That's growth.
And we have, and that's how you grow.
Yeah.
I wish I could say that I get wiser, smarter, or like learn more about myself when things are all going good, but I don't. Mm-hmm. It's really when I'm like having to surrender to the hard times and like figure out what I'm made of, who I, what my beliefs are, what's really like, you know, in my head is when you discover that when you're going through hard stuff. And
yes.
I feel like, unfortunately, like that's just the setup. And so I think I think life is a series of seasons,
absolutely,
but that the seasons repeat.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a time in my 20s where I thought once I make it out of my early 20 broke season,
you never go back.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And obviously I hope I never go back to having to like, you know, buy bodega popcorn one bag at a time.
Yeah.
But like but you know, I think there's different versions of what that looks like, and I think that's the thing I think.
Yes,
I realize is it's never gonna stop.
The elevation,
elevation, and like
that's
what it requires of you to get to the next level.
What it requires.
And that's why a lot of people stop.
And talk about it.
Stay.
Talk
Listen.
About it. Baby, it's much easier just to find you a good job.
Listen.
Call it a day and clock in and clock out. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a path for every single person. Mm-hmm. There are 9-to-5 entrepreneurs who are going to make the amazing feats and movements within corporate that need to be made. We need corporate allies to be able to do the work we're doing. So please, go to work. Right. Everybody can't be an influencer and content creator.
Entrepreneurship is not everybody's purpose.
That's what I'm saying. And also, like, to be honest, like, if we are going to content create our lives out of, like, the world working. Like, we need pilots, flight attendants, bus drivers, doctors, lawyers. Like, we need people who can build a table, build a house. Like, we're going to be sitting here like, so who's going to call a mechanic? And who knows one?
I love my mechanic.
Well, he's a content creator now. He doesn't do mechanics
anymore. He's a content creator.
And she's an influencer because she doesn't do hair anymore. Like, no, I need you to do my hair.
That's why the girls are like, men, put down the mics and pick back up the tool belt.
Yes. Yes.
Nobody knows how to fix my car.
Everyone has a microphone.
My grandpa used to be able to change the oil.
And they telling us, get back to the home.
Everybody has a kitchen. Microphone.
Just some of us. You know, my woman is still cooking. Like, we made it to both. But anyway.
No, I ain't cooking.
Listen, we all know our strengths. But I think we're speaking to it some, but like, what are the things you use to stay encouraged?
Yeah. Mm.
Because I think to your point, yes, because even for me, I don't know if I'm going to be an entrepreneur forever.
Talk about it.
So that's what I mean, like, to a point about like, it's not one way it looks to do it. Mm-hmm. My purpose could lead me to have to go back and do it within a corporation again. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I would still feel like I'm fully operating within it. You know what I mean? It takes different shells, mm-hmm. like mediums, all these things. Mm-hmm. But how do you stay encouraged during these transition seasons, mm-hmm. or these valley seasons?
Mm-hmm. So I have a new therapist. After my father passed, I had stopped being in therapy for about a year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I'm at peace with his death. Like, he's in a better place. But let me just have somebody.
Smart.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Smart.
The grief hits in a different way than I was expecting. So 18 months ago, I started with a new therapist. And also, you know how hard it is to find a black woman therapist.
Yes, I do.
And this is how I also know she was sent to me by the divine, because like, I found her on Black Girl Therapy. Mm-hmm. I emailed her. She says, yes, I just have availability once a week now at the perfect time that fit every Monday at 2. We locked in, we had a session, and we've been rocking ever since. But one thing that she has taught me is like, you cannot fail.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And when I tell you, I have to say that to myself all day long.
Well, yeah, like, tell me the rest of it. She said, you cannot fail.
You cannot fail. You cannot fail. They will not let you fail. Your ancestors will not let you fail. Like, as long as you are doing the work, again, it doesn't mean it's not hard. It doesn't mean that, like, you go pitch a funder and they're like, no, this isn't really what I want to do. Like, that is not failure. That is, like you said, rejection is protection. That funder probably is not the right person to fund Watering Hole, because they might put editorial restraints.
Yeah.
But like, the things that need to be put in front of you will happen in ways where, like, have you ever seen those movies where like things just like pop in, like it kind of just falls into place? It's like, that is how it will work when you, one, get your brain, get your mind, get your heart, get your spirit in alignment, and then start working in your purpose. And I just have like so many testimonies, even before I knew that mindset, but I have like so many testimonies, even just in the last 24 hours, where I'm like, yep, that's right, I cannot fail, because it just works out. Mm-hmm. It just works out. Might not work out the way you think it's gonna work out.
Because that's the kicker.
That's why you can't be married to any outcome.
My therapy journey has been that
release
that
expectations.
Should work. That should word. That it is. Should. It seems so innocent. Oh, yes. But it's not. Oh, but it's not. That's my accent.
There you go.
there's something to be said about telling yourself that your life as is not good enough. And the should of it all, like, oh, I should have made it here by now. Mm-hmm. I should have this. Oh, baby, when I turned 30, the should season I was in was just full on, like, this isn't good enough. I don't have a man. I don't have a baby. Mm-hmm. I don't have a house. I don't have this. I put all this aside for my career. I sacrificed all that to put that on hold. And then I don't even have a job I want.
Baby.
Like, I was sick.
Bad.
Sick. And then I finally realized, like, I'm over here making myself sick over something I cannot control. So what I can control is how I look around and be grateful for the fact that my family's good, my friends are good, yes. I'm good. I'm able to get up in the morning and get out of bed, because there was a minute there where it was like, oh, bed is definitely my vibe. It's just my vibe now. It's just yeah. bed. It's just stay bed. There. And I had to really fight for my own life and not in just like physical, but also spiritual, mental, purpose-driven life. And I had to learn to say, Lord, I trust you. And like the affirmations, the yes. daily affirmations I say really helped build the foundation of the mindset that I have now, where it's like, as a journalist, you learn not to be the story, you learn not to create, you learn to follow things. Mm-hmm. And for so long, like God was giving me these like, you are the person that's supposed to be in the driver's seat of your life. Mm-hmm. I just was like, no, I'll just stay in the passenger seat. And now I'm finally able to be like, oh, I can create the things I wanna see. I can yes. have the conversations I wanna have. I do wanna do things like that. So let me get into the driver's seat. And that only is because like every day I say, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I am a perfect expression of God's creative genius. Like all those different things help me to just find the balance and the stage to go do what God has asked me to do. And then I'm like, oh, okay, Lord. Another thing? I don't know how to do this either. But okay.
Right. I think my faith is my answer too. And then, therapy, I think it's a very mixture of like faith and therapy. And like community.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think having people who are in it, who are like dealing with what you're dealing with, helps you know that you're not alone.
Yep.
You know, that it's not personal.
Yep.
You know, I think for me, it's really about knowing that if it's happening, God's allowing it.
Yeah.
And if he's allowing it, I must need it for some reason.
Yes.
Or it's that it's going to be used for good.
Yes.
And so I have to trust that when I'm feeling like you, where it's like, this is not happening. I'm like, well, I guess God knows something that I don't know.
That's right.
Which is obviously true. So yes. I'm like, LOL, that you think you would know. Like, he must know something I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a version of me in the future that only he knows. And only he knows what will take me there.
That's Amen. Right.
And so that's what I have to follow. So like for me, that's what like when things seem to just not be working out, when contracts go away or like things didn't happen the way I think I they're supposed to, I remind myself that it's not my plan, it's his plan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
Amen.
That's literally what grounds me, because otherwise I would still be in bed right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I make a hard pivot?
No, we need to, because I think, yes, let's do it.
I'm a nosy.
Okay. Hard pivot to Love is Blind.
Wow. Yeah,
Speaking of things that work out as they have no idea what's going to happen.
And this is why. This is why.
Now I don't even know if God can turn that around for good.
Okay. This is why, though. I'm going to tell you why.
That had nothing to do with me. I'm just
saying. Right. He said, I didn't tell you to go on that show.
How many times Tyler prays on the show? Go ahead.
Listen. This is going to be a spoiler alert.
Yes, but this is like,
if you, too bad.
It's been a week.
Get over it. Yeah, right.
If you have not watched the weddings, leave now. Come back.
So I watched it last night because I, you know, you got me on. I wasn't watching the season.
It's my fault. I'll take it.
And the way, I'm forgetting the homegirl's name.
Marissa.
Oh,
the whale.
We've all been there.
But let me tell you something about Let God Work It Out.
I almost cried in the first 10 minutes.
I saw her wailing and I actually smiled.
Because you knew what you didn't know.
Because I remember my season of wailing and sitting and trying to convince a man to pick me.
Mm. Mm.
And the way I am not in that season now.
And we thank God.
And we thank God for that.
And not just that.
But the way, if he had a picked me, we wouldn't be sitting on this couch.
Say it again.
We wouldn't have been sitting on this couch, baby. Listen, I smiled because sometimes you see things and it triggers you, and sometimes you see things and it reminds you of your growth. And I had a little praise fest last night. That's why also I'm so tired. I was supposed to get 2 hours of sleep last night, and I only got one.
You were supposed to get to? Well, that was your plan?
Right. That was the intention.
That's a whole other. We in election season. It's hustle bustle out here.
Got it.
But like, her wailing was awful. And I felt so bad for her.
I just want to get to the TV.
I know. But I want to say this straight to the camera. I wanted him to
disappear. I wanted her to stop hugging him.
Yeah. I know, because she thought hugging him would change his mind, and it's not. But I want to say this to the ladies out there.
Tell them.
If you are in despair, if you remember where I was last week, and I wasn't even like rock bottom, but if you feel and you are wailing like Marissa
talk
did,
about it.
Receive that thing is not for you. Anything that is for you is never going to hurt you like that. Mm-mm. Ever, ever, ever. And it is so hard, but just release it and say, something else is better out there
yeah.
for me.
There is somebody who you will not be too much for.
Not be too much
that
for.
That was the line that I think made a lot of women feel like, where he's like, am I too much? Like, being told
he ain't
that
enough
you,
for her.
You ain't enough for me, but also saying that she's too much, but also saying, but it's not you, it's me. But no, like the way that men, like, don't have a real reason. It's like really, like the whole conversation is you not having. She even said, give me something tangible.
Right, like I don't
because
know what you're saying.
Because a lot of times it's just, I just don't want all this energy talk. Shut up. It's like you're just, all vibes, no accountability. It's
yes.
like,
yes.
I just don't. It's just so. It's just she deserves better. For all we know, that man just didn't want to not have to wear a condom. Didn't want to have to wear a condom
in
another
time. Ridiculous.
Like literally, like it's the whole pull out of the rug about like how did you? When she kept saying how did you get here so fast? Or like I
he
thought
he was always
like, what?
There.
She's like I don't know if it was real.
He was always there.
Yeah, the whole I don't know if it was real. These were the words from Marissa's. Like thing that I feel like hits so many women
yeah. mm-hmm.
because we've all had that moment where one of these things at least were true.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where you're like, how did we get here? I thought everything was fine. Or it really it is so jarring to me. Not even just jarring, scary to me. How people can say that they're deeply in love and then treat people like
that way.
But I also understand the older I get that people can only love you to the capacity that they can love themselves.
That's right.
And a lot of times we're looking for people to do things for us that they don't even do for themselves. So why are they going to do it for me if you can't do it for yourself?
That's right.
And there's just a lot of broken people out here trying to love people.
Yeah.
And that is really the name of what Love is Blind should be. Just broken people out here trying to be on TV loving people.
Through a while.
But it's just, I think with them, it was more of that. I think, when we get to the Ashley and Tyler,
can I say something before we get to Ash and Tyler?
Oh yeah, Marissa.
Because Marissa and them.
Yes,
Marissa and them. Mm-hmm. I really wanted. I think it's so great when you watch shows because you see like where your growth has taken
yes.
you.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember same way being Marissa. Like my first love decided that I was too much. My life was gonna be too much, and just got off the train.
Women like us have all been told.
Yeah,
like,
hello.
If you're successful.
You're
like vibrant.
Yeah, you have a
woman,
life and you have a purpose,
and you have standards, and you have like you require like a level of like emotional like
yes
maturity. You're too much.
And the good woman speech is something that we've all heard so many times.
Yeah.
So you're such. I just can't. And I'm like, look, amen, rejection, protection. But at the end of the day, what I
it still hurts.
It still hurts.
It still hurts.
And that's what I also was grateful that Marissa like grieved in that moment
yes.
fully because I'm like so many of us would have been like that tough.
Yeah.
Like, all right, you good, get out. Like how Alex did.
Yeah.
Which I love Alex. Good for her.
Yeah.
Because two can go.
Yeah.
But for Marissa, I just hope that like she realizes that man, that there was always a tinge of uncertainty throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like he would be unsure and call out these little things that he said he was like able to handle. And then when it really came down to it, he wasn't able to handle it. If one conversation about your ex could make you question what we've gone through.
Also, it's like, why did you sign up for the show? You signed up for a show where getting married is the goal. If you weren't ready to get married again, why are you on the show?
And why wait till now to have it? You didn't think about calling your cousin 6 weeks ago?
Why are you on this show if you were not sure if you were ready to get married again?
You weren't here when we had this conversation, but this is what I mean by distractions.
Yeah.
I don't mean like rejecting, but like having the discernment to be like, you're a distract. You are going to be a distraction. Every time you bring up these little doubts or whatever, like
I don't have time to bring you back.
I can see it.
I can see it. And it's like, and that's why it's really good for Marissa because Marissa's the kind of person who was going to spend her whole life
trying to make
reminding him, bringing him to be in on this thing. Well, that's not part of the working relationships
exactly.
are work.
Yes.
But you don't.
Not like
but
it's not, that
not
hard.
About convincing somebody that you're worth doing the work for. That is not. What relationships should be, and that is why I beg you, ladies, call 1-800-CORN-MAN now before you beg a man.
That's right.
To stay with you.
Okay,
you
Ashley Tyler.
You said Cleo. Call
Cleo Cornman now. That's how I feel whenever we look into a camera, and that's why I said that.
1-800.
No, anyway,
right, basically.
And Ashley and Tyler.
And so speaking of these. Ashley and Tyler.
God.
It was like watching a horror story. It was like watching a horror movie, watching that wedding go down. It also, I also felt like, is this what God feels like? When he watches us
just
commit to people
that we ain't supposed
that
to,
we ain't supposed to because I know what she don't know, right?
Right.
And that's and God know what we don't know. So I really was thinking,
like,
this is, is this how God feels watching me be with these people that he know lying to me?
How terrifying.
How terrifying. I don't know how he does it at the max that he does.
Yes.
But it's like, but it's just because I literally was like watching. Like, I was screaming at the TV, don't do it.
I know.
Run!
I know.
He has children. Because how? Three of them. It's like,
it wasn't through intimidation. It's a process.
They're not. He was just with them at Christmas.
That was intercourse on them twins.
I do have a question. There's a part of me that is like, I think he told. I think there's something we might not know.
Well, here's.
I think.
Well, no.
Is.
Let me just say this, because at first I'm watching the wedding. I see, because up till now people kept saying we've never seen Tyler's people. And right. That's the thing. Like, we've never had anybody there to hold accountable the story we're seeing on TikTok. We see his boys, and I'm like, oh, so none of his friends gonna ask him why his kid's not there?
Yeah.
Right. At the wedding?
Yes.
Nobody's gonna ask why
his
mom. And you're talking and his mom and his grandma. And y'all gonna talk about
mama.
And they had a whole conversation about why his dad wasn't there.
Right.
And but not about why his kids weren't there.
Enablers.
And then also
the patterns are crazy.
The friends are having a conversation about him wanting to have kids.
He already got three of them. Yes.
I'm like, I feel like
don't make no sense.
I believe I have to believe. Because the 10% of faith in humanity I still have, that Tyler must have not told them what he told Ashley. I see a world where maybe Tyler told them, I told her about the kids, we just don't want to talk about them on camera.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to bring them on TV. So don't mention them on camera. Like, because I could see his boys lying for him.
But
his
mama?
I mean, and I know boy moms are crazy.
Yeah, I
know
they
do anything. Hey. But, like, you gonna let him erase your grandbabies like that is nuts.
Boy moms will.
But I've heard from the girls on Threads that his mom apparently deleted all the pictures of the kids
yes.
on Facebook.
Yes.
But I also have heard that Ashley is still defending him.
He is. She is.
Currently.
That's
on
why.
What?
That's
on
Instagram.
Or something saying,
yes.
Like, here, like, we don't know
the whole story.
Story.
That's why I think.
I can't wait for the reunion.
I can't wait.
I said, what could. Because
what could be the story
I don't
other
know,
than the truth?
They can't say nothing until the reunion airs. But I'm also like, well, girl, what we did see was him lie to you about
the situation.
Just because maybe, and God forbid, but I think that's what's going to happen. You forgive him doesn't mean that we got to.
Yeah, because
that's some trifling. That's entrapment. To marry somebody.
It's not entrapment.
That's the grounds for an annulment. Quit.
Because he lied.
Like, you lied.
She said, do the kids know what
you
look like?
And he
and
goes,
he said,
no.
But
you know what? But
so.
You know what? But you know what?
I was right.
But you know what? That answer in and of itself, you could tell that was a lie. And you could tell, like, but again, experience when you like, you don't think so. I'm going to ask, like, 3 follow-up questions.
And this is the
that.
Same Ashley. This is the same Ashley on her wedding day who was talking about how she has great intuition.
She said
that line, and I said, all America said.
Baby, you're going to have to tune that in.
I think it's a little broken.
All right.
Intuition is giving Thanksgiving.
Well, listen.
That was crazy.
So that was crazy. And then there's the one happy couple.
You.
Garrett and the girl.
Garrett.
Who I hate that the happy couple. If you're not Brett. And my girl Tiffany,
I don't remember your name.
Yeah.
I know.
But I do think that the one to two happy married couples we get per season in Love is Blind is not worth the wreckage.
Wait, do we know if Milton and the other chick is still there?
They're still together. I mean, last I checked, and she was crazy.
Yeah, she was.
But they're long distance.
He's going
to school in California.
He's out here
at school, like at UNC or USC or something.
Milton, come through, bro.
And, like, she's still in, like, wherever they were, Texas. I don't know. Again, I haven't checked on them in a while, so maybe that's
I'm okay. I don't need to check on them either.
As long as Brett and Tiffany stay married, I'm good.
Yeah.
Bliss and her guy surprised
had a baby.
Me because
yeah,
they had the
happy.
First Love of the Blind baby.
Yeah.
There's 2 Love of the Blind babies now.
Yeah.
Obviously, Lauren and Cameron in season 1 people are still holding
down.
But I do think that Love is Blind is becoming increasingly dangerous. And I just want to end on the note.
It's trauma porn.
I've said it online several times. It really just shows the danger
of
falling in love with somebody based on their words alone.
Yes.
That's why shit hits the fan after the pods every single time. Because then people have to back up all the things that they said that they were who they were, what kind of partner they were. Everybody just
it's actually worse.
No self-awareness.
It's actually worse than just like talking to people. I feel it's like the worst iteration of like we're in the talking phase.
Yeah.
Because like you just literally sit there and you can like make up stories.
And you have to just trust what they say.
And you don't have to, because sometimes when people make up stories, you can tell like they look away, they're like fidgety. But these cats just sitting behind like, they don't this, they don't that.
And it's just so sick that people are so willing to lie to people.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I don't like about it. Especially the men. It is crazy the kind of lies that we discover after the even last season. People were lying like crazy. So,
all right, ladies. Love is blind. Love is not a lie. No. Love is not a lie.
Love is possible,
but requires work.
Love is possible, but
discernment,
sight.
Therapy,
love sight. Love is not blind.
It requires the vision to see through stuff.
And it requires time.
Time.
How about that?
How about that? More than 2 weeks.
Yes. How about that? All right, well, Miss Gia and Silva, we've come to the end of our show. We're going to do this quick rapid fire because we're running out of time. But we always like to give somebody their flowers. So why don't I start with you? Who would you like to give your flowers to today?
I have two black women I'd like to give my flowers to, Kiana and Jana Handy. They are the founders of Black Market Vintage, and they just dropped their first book called Black Market Vintage, Reclaiming our, I want to make sure I say it right, but it's a book, it's a coffee table book and a memoir about the work they do to reclaim our place in history, the things that mattered to us, our stories, our pictures, all the things. They're antiquers of black things. So definitely check out Black Market Vintage. It's available at blackmarketvintage.com, BLKMKTVintage.com.
And they have an exhibit somewhere right now?
And they also have they also curated the opening of the exhibit, I think it's called Joy. But it's a black woman's exhibit on the fourth floor at the Brooklyn Museum.
All right.
So go they them grow. So congrats, sister.
Congrats, ladies. I hadn't heard, so now I'll have to check it out.
Yes.
What about you, Miss? You have
my copy on the way.
Okay. What about you, Miss Sylvia?
I feel like I'm always giving flowers to music people at this point, but I feel like the girls are just doing. I know I gave it to Gloria Hallelujah last time.
I love a Gloria.
This time I would love to give it. I'm a little late to the game, but Layla exclamation mark. Also known as Mos Def's daughter, Yasiin Bey. Mm-hmm. Daughter, her album
is really good.
Gap Year.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, it is so good. I my friends put me onto it during homecoming. I don't know why. I guess because of her dad. I thought it was gonna be a rap album, but she sings.
Wow. Oh.
And it's her voice is amazing. It's like she has the colors of YouTube. Like she did that when those performance videos. But like also, I just love. I just feel like not age appropriate, but I love that like she's like 19 or 18 and like her music feels like that. Mm. Like it's like homeroom freestyle or like
cute, you know, like
prom blackberry ass. Like she's still grown and mature, but I do feel like I remember like people saying that like there's like certain ages where music just got so grown so fast that I feel like that's why I love Chloe and Halle's album, last album. Mm-hmm. It's like something for the girls who are like 18, 19, who aren't necessarily having sex yet or whatever it may be, but are in love and having crushes and like it just feels like that earliness. And then there's obviously mature notes, but I just love. It just is very refreshing. Mm. It's her sound, it's her own, and then she's just so talented. So,
Layla, Gap Year.
Layla, exclamation point. The album is called Gap Year. It came out in August, so not too old.
Long ago.
Okay. Okay, perfect. I'm going to check that out.
Okay, we're going to get her streams up. Okay. I'm giving mine to one Miss Teresa Witherspoon, who is a former New York Liberty WNBA player. Mm-hmm. When I went to the New York Liberty and watched her play for the first WNBA game, like the second season of the WNBA, and the New York Liberty just for the first time in franchise history, they won their championship.
They sure did.
And the reason why is because it kind of goes back to our conversation we were having earlier. Sometimes you plant seeds and you don't get to be the person that actually lets the flower bloom, but your seed is what flowers for flowers to bloom later. And I think that that is her story. She's like an amazing baller and she's had a rough year, but like there's more for her in this in this industry, and I wanted to give her my flowers.
I'm so glad she was there for that game.
Me too.
It was so beautiful to see her, to see Ellie on the ground.
Oh my gosh. Ellie on the ground. I want to be Ellie's friend.
Ellie on the ground, like literally boo-hooing, like we did it. Spike Lee on the ground. Spike, like, yes. That game was amazing. Like that, I mean, the reaction to them winning was
that was
amazing.
Not amazing. An easy win, but
no, it wasn't.
Not an easy win.
No.
It wasn't an easy game, and I know there's a lot of controversy around it, but you know, happy for them.
Yes. Happy for them.
All right. That's it. That was our wait a minute. Thank you, Gia. Thank we gotta you. Have you back, girl.
Yes, no,
come on.
If we can pin her down in LA.
Find it.
Stay booked and busy, girl. That's a blessing.
No, I love
okay?
that for Z, but my baby is across the map. But so yes. are you. Y'all have
that's
that.
True. Yes, that's you are too.
Right.
Now. So,
anywho, mm-hmm. we're going to have you back sooner rather than later. Yeah. You're going to be back sooner.
Yeah.
Real soon.
And you know where to find us. Make sure you to follow, comment, like, share on Watering Home Media. If you have questions, comments, get into our group chat, and we'll be back soon. Peace.
My favorite part about being on Wait a Minute was actually the connections that we found in our careers, like how we all had to bet on ourselves and really become 100% on board for each of our journeys and what God has for us. I love conversations about faith and going for what you're supposed to be doing. And so those ladies just made it safe for me to talk about. And I'm so proud of them. So proud of Watering Hole Media. So proud of Sylvia. So proud of all of us who are on the journey. I'm proud of me. Amen. So I'm just grateful to be here and to be able to find women who are doing and being all that they can be.
Oh, it was so fun to have my girl Gia on today. We've been friends for almost a decade at this point, which sounds so crazy. We must have obviously met when we were 15. But I love Gia. I love working with her. She's probably one of my peers who I work with the most often. Like, it's just this real kindred spirit, soul sister. And it was so great for her to come on the show. I knew she'd be a great fit. I'm so glad that everybody wanted her to come on. And she's just so great at what she does, so gracious, so wise, so beautiful. I mean, what's not to love? It just keeps giving. And I'm just happy that we got to do this together today.
I think my favorite part of today was being able to share a little bit more about my story, like the low parts. I think I am an optimistic person, and so sometimes I always present like everything is together, but in order for you to have your high highs, you just often have to have low lows, and just being able to talk about that in a safe space, it doesn't happen often, but I'm glad it happens today.